Stuff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk.
Now then, let's have a look at the A to Z of Merseyside football once again. For those who've joined us a little bit late in the alphabet, we've been doing it for a few weeks now. John Keith is the man with the knowledge. He joins me and we're going through the alphabet Merseyside-wise. So we've done the A's, the B's and the C, some very notable names. But once you get to D's, there's two that absolutely stand out and maybe deserve their own segments. Is that right, John?
Well, that's exactly right, Steve. They're superheroes of Merseyside football, Dixie Dean and Kenny Dalglish. They don't come any bigger, do they? Their contributions, as you say, have been so huge. We'll talk about them individually, starting in chronological order. Dixie today, Kenny next week. Steve, I've been fortunate to know both these legendary figures quite well. I've written books with or about both of them. And in Dixie's case, my colleague Jill Beattie and I have also produced a stage show about the great man, the Dixie Dean story, which has played at many venues since it premiered in 2008. And, well, what a great goalscorer this man was. William Ralph Dean, born in Laird Street, Birkenhead, January 1907, to the delight of his parents William and Sarah, who already had five girls and were overjoyed at the arrival of a boy. His mother ran two fish and chip shops. Dixie's father was a railway engine driver and an Everton supporter. And when he took his young son to see the team play during Goodison's 1914-15 title-winning season, little did he know he was changing the course of football history. It was the only time the boyhood Dixie saw Everton play, but it made an enduring impression on him, and he vowed that one day he'd play for them.
He only went to see them once.
He only saw them play once before he signed for them.
That's amazing, isn't it? But he became devoted to the idea to be an Everton player.
Just that one trip with his father in the season they won the title, 14-15, it made a lasting impression on him, and that was the team he wanted to play for, and he fulfilled that ambition. As a boy, he played football wherever and whenever he could, including for Laird Street School, even a Borstal team, would you believe? And he practised by heading a ball against the wall of the nearby Wesleyan Chapel. No academies then, of course. And as a boy, he saw the military recruits marching to the docks to board ships to take them to the killing fields of the First World War. And Dixie said one thing he noticed was the boots as they hit the ground as they walked. But he said the only boots I wanted were football boots. And his wish was granted when the family bought him some when he was 9. He left school at 14. He played for Birkenhead Schoolboys for 2 seasons rather than 1. He was so good he was selected for them a year earlier than usual. Now, there are 2 theories put forward, Steve, about his nickname. One is that it was because of his swarthy good looks and dark curly hair. The other, that it came from a street tag game when the strength of his hands earned him the nickname Digsy. Anyway, whatever it was, the name Dixie just meant goals, like the day, as a boy, he scored 18 in 3 games on the same day. I know it's amazing, isn't it? Everyone was alerted by this scoring phenomenon, and it was local club Tranmere who signed him, first as an amateur, November 1923, as he approached his 17th birthday, and as a pro in April 1924 at £4.05 a week. During the season, there was no money in the summer. And the Birkenhead News were the first to print the name Dixie. He scored on his debut for Tranmere Reserves, made rapid progress. He made his league debut in the 3rd Division North at the age of 16 years, 355 days. And he even overcame an injury absence when he lost a testicle in a reserve match challenge by a big, beefy opposing centre-half.
Wow.
Yeah. His potent goal scoring alerted the whole of football, and he'd taken his output to 27 goals in 33 Tranmere appearances when Everton's secretary manager Tom McIntosh made Dixie's dream come true, signing him for £3,000 in March 1925.
So perhaps it wasn't obvious straight away to the big clubs. Do you know what I mean? If he's starting at Tranmere Rovers and then he's, you know, your clubs like Everton are waiting to pounce on him.
But while he was at Tranmere, all the clubs all over the country were looking at Dixie, but he said, no, the only club I want to sign for is Everton. He even went to visit Newcastle at St James's Park and they offered him everything. He says, no, when I move from Tranmere, I'm going to go to Everton. He was just insistent on that. Arsenal even put out a statement saying, a telegram they sent out to the media saying, Arsenal stop, not interested in Dean stop. That's because he told me he wasn't going to sign for them.
But they actually wanted him.
Oh, they did, yeah. Clubs all over the country wanted him. But anyway, he moved to Everton. It was a marriage made in football heaven. His scoring exploits thrilled the whole country and, of course, instilled fear into opposing defences. Now, although he stood a couple of inches short of 6 feet, his heading was prodigious. It was said that in practice, he could head a ball into the net from the halfway line. And he told me that the secret was that, unlike most players, he kept his eyes open as he made contact with the ball in the air. But he was equally deadly with his feet. In his first full Everton season of 1925-26, he scored 33 goals, their only player in double figures. And amazingly, the following season, just 15 weeks after suffering a fractured skull and jaw in a summer motorcycle accident, which even threatened his life, he was back in action scoring goals again. But the season that made him an immortal legend was 1927-28. He rattled in an astonishing 60 league goals in 39 games, a record that I think will stand forever. And in all that campaign, you won't believe this, he scored 100 goals in 56 matches.
Right, which... well, you caught up with him on your programme a few years ago, didn't you? And he talked about those 60 goals.
Yes.
So let's have some thoughts from Dixie Dean himself, who appeared on Strictly John Keith, to talk about what was an absolutely remarkable footballing achievement.
Oh, that was a great season. I mean, it was one of those seasons that absolutely everything went right. And with the team as well. Not only myself, but the team. We really had a great side. And there was no such thing as, talking about tactics or anything like that.
No.
We just went on there and done what was supposed to be done.
Did you not have very many sort of tactical talks before the game at all? What was said?
We never had any. No, never had any whatsoever. It was only just a case of some of them saying, we'll play this and we'll play that and we'll play the other. Well, that was ridiculous. We just went on there. And as you can tell by the scoring that did happen, that it was a case of put that ball in that net, and that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what we've done.
The brilliant Dixie Dean, that did appear on a Strictly John Keith programme, but he was in conversation there with...
He was in conversation with Frank McFarlane, who'd interviewed him many, many years before, because, of course, Dixie died in 1980, which I'll come to shortly. So Frank was very kindly donated his wonderful interviews to us. If you remember, we had several of them, including Dixie.
Do you not love the great bit in that interview where he said, we didn't have any tactics?
No tactics.
No tactics.
It. It was all very simple, go out and win the game or whatever, you know. By the time he left for Notts County in March 1938, he'd scored 349 league goals for Everton, an all-time record for one club, as are his 37 senior hat-tricks and a Goodison jersey. He scored 18 goals in 16 England outings. This is... Even when you see it in black and white, you can't believe it. His grand career total was 440 goals in 497 matches. It's just unbelievable. For a man who said, to quote him, going out there and getting the ball in that onion bag as soon as possible. That's my job. And goodness me, didn't he do it? Now, on March the 1st, 1980, Dixie was then in a wheelchair after the amputation of his right leg. And he was one of my top table guests at the old Holiday Inn when we launched the Everton and Liverpool FC annuals that year. The others were Billy Little, Brian LeBone and Bill Shankly. And Shanks proceeded to make a speech in praise of Dixie, which sadly, Steve, became his obituary, because a few hours later, after I'd taken both Bills, Shankly and Dean, to Goodison for the Mersey Derby, Dixie collapsed and died late in the game at the age of 73. His family said if he'd chosen somewhere to exit this world, he'd have chosen Goodison Park. Well, needless to say, it was a poignant, surreal day I'll always remember. And football will always remember the deeds of William Ralph Dean, the fabulous Dixie. As he heard Bill Shankly say to him, Bill Dean belongs in the company of the supremely great, like Beethoven, Rembrandt and Shakespeare. Shank says it all, doesn't he?
Doesn't get much higher than that, does he? What a player, what a record. Some of those figures are astronomical, aren't they? Right, that was the first of the D's, Dixie Dean, an absolute phenomenon. We're going to talk about another one next week, which is Kenny Dalglish, who's up there probably in the same sort of stratosphere. Just to conclude this week, you've got another of your brilliant stage shows on tonight, and you're reflecting on the 40th anniversary of Liverpool's first European Cup win.
Yes, Steve, at the New Brighton Floral Pavilion, the Cops Roman Carnival. I'll be joined on stage by three of Bob Paisley's great side, Ian Callaghan, Jimmy Case and Phil Neal, from what I think is probably the landmark result in Liverpool history, that first European Cup win. It took them over the threshold from being a good European team to one of the elite, and of course signposted the way to go on to win five European Cup. So I'm sure it'll be a great show. We look forward to seeing people there.
There's still a few seats left there. If you want to get down to the Floral Pavilion in New Brighton, it's sure to be absolutely amazing. Those three legends, and we should call them legends, are great to listen to. John's there as well. Join them tonight to reflect on 40 years since Liverpool's first European Cup win against Borussia Mönchengladbach. John, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Steve Hothersall's kick-off. This is Radio City Talk.